Just in time for the gift-centered holiday of your choice, we discuss the Toy Store film, Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin.
So, we're all back together.
Yeah, that's cool.
Back together again.
Sure.
Just like that song from Muppet's Take Manhattan.
I don't remember that part.
It must have been a really good movie to draw us all together, though, right?
What about Reunited and It Feels So Good?
That's not a movie.
That's a good song, though.
Yeah. Your mic's drooping really weird.
I know. This mic is having trouble staying erect.
Yeah.
It needs Mike Agra.
Yeah, I was...
It's not even a pun, is the thing.
No, I just took a word and put it into another word. It's called a portmanteau.
It's a portmanteau.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If my mic stays erect for more than 4 hours, I have to call a mic doctor.
Nice. Before the end of this podcast, I'll have thought of a good joke.
Okay, you got time.
Yeah. Okay.
The word priapism. Try and work that in.
Okay. It's a really big word, though.
So,
It is a very big word for a very big thing.
For the holidays... I said the
holidays.
Because I'm part of a war on Christmas. I'm Christian. Stuart, you worship the old ones. And Elliot, you're Jewish.
Yes.
In seriousness.
I worship the oldest one.
So we don't want to exclude anyone, but we watched a movie about toys. Was that movie Toys?
Robin Williams. I kind of wish it was, and then I remembered that movie wasn't very good. Except I really liked how at the end of that movie, where LL Cool J gets in some action scenes,
mm-hmm.
and all the action scenes are really shaky, like Ridley Scott shot it. Ridley Scott didn't make that movie, right?
No,
that was Barry Levinson.
I liked that there was the...
best known for Diner.
The worst toy at the end, the kind of pig squid thing in the giant well, and you never really got to see it. It was like a Dianoga, but you never really got to see it, and I just remember seeing the movie and be like, what market was there for that toy? Even a military market. It's just some horrible thing that lives in the bottom of a well.
The thing that really bugged me about toys, I mean, obviously...
Let's discuss this 13-year-old movie.
No, but even when I saw it at the time, when I was much younger and stupider, I thought, okay, well, this whole film has been building up this anti-war sentiment, and they're like, oh, you know, these peaceful toys are going to be taken over and
like
turn into
soldiers.
War toys. And then at the end, how do they defeat the war toys? The peaceful toys fight them in a war.
They have to learn to stand up on their own two toy feet.
Yeah. I went to that movie expecting something really exciting, like a Tim Burton movie, or at the very least, like Mom and Dad Save the World, or Stay Tuned.
There was that thrilling...
Stay Tuned is an underrated film that I've not seen since I was 15 years old.
It does have that Chuck Jones sequence. You're looking at me as if you don't believe it.
I just didn't remember.
The animated sequence was done by Chuck Jones.
In Toys or Stay Tuned?
In Stay Tuned.
Oh, okay. I remember that. I think I meant Toys. In Toys, all I remember is the fake music video that they pipe into the security guards so they can sneak into the building.
You were probably too thrilled, Stuart, by the trailer of Robin Williams standing in tall grass.
Yeah, well, it was just...
it does combine both things you love.
Tall grass and Robin Williams. Yeah, well, it was. I was going through this big Fisher King.
You know what would make Patch Adams better? If it took place on a prairie. Or on the Serengeti.
Yeah, I mean, I was going through a real, like, Fisher King phase, and... Wait, Robin Williams was in Fisher King, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I naturally thought Toys would have scratched that itch, but no, it didn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't very good.
And it didn't have, say, Terry Gilliam at the helm.
No.
Or Jeff Bridges as well.
Listen, Michael Gambon got a paycheck. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
LL Cool J got to be cool.
Joan Cusack played
some ladies
sort of
love him.
Robot woman, was she?
Yeah. Joan Cusack was the best thing about that movie, which is not saying a lot.
Well, and we've said this before, I think, in podcasts. She's the best thing about any movie.
That's probably true.
I don't know if I'm being heard on
the
microphone.
I'd have to think.
I mean,
that takes a while.
I mean, not any movie.
She's not the best thing about
the Manchurian Candidate.
In.
She's not in it. Yeah, she's not the best thing about No, I'm having trouble thinking of a movie she's in that she's not the best thing in.
Long pauses into the thing so I can edit them out later. Yeah, I like to have something to do.
You need a point where you can cut to a shot of a robot in a tuxedo sitting at a boardroom table.
Ooh, that sounds like a movie I just saw.
Or a reference to a movie I just saw.
That, well, both, yes.
That movie was called Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium.
And as always, with any movie where the title rhymes, it was great.
Well, it's a good sign.
Has there ever been a good movie with a rhyming title?
Probably.
Okay, well, that was very fair of you.
The Gay Divorcee.
Okay, The Gay Divorcee. There you go. Not the best Astaire Rogers, but still very good.
That's the movie we watch, right?
The Gay Divorcee.
Mr. Megorium's
Yeah, we watched Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, a movie I was very excited to watch.
Yeah, again.
Because it seems wrong-headed on every level.
Okay. This movie really brought whimsy back to the national conversation.
It's exactly what it did. In all the wrong ways.
Remember how after Mr. Megorium came out, there was so much whimsy, and people were just running around doing crazy things?
Well, what didn't this movie come out around the same time as that movie where... like the animated girl comes to
Enchanted.
Yeah,
this was a little before then, I think.
Okay, no, I was talking about Cool World, dude.
Okay, this was far after that. What I love about Cool World, it's the movie that introduces you to Gabriel Byrne and then doesn't tell you for a little bit that he is not the hero of the film. And is, in fact, almost a side character at times.
That is so,
why
so
bother?
True. It's awesome. The movie's like, okay, well, we're going to have sort of a traditional Hollywood narrative that's going to be shunted off to the side at every opportunity to have crazy, like, Ralph Bakshi characters doing things in the sides of the screen.
Well, that's the thing.
It would horrify you.
It's very much a movie where you can see Ralph Bakshi arguing with the producers of the film in every single frame.
I was originally talking about Enchanted. Like, wasn't that also an attempt to, like, capture America's love of whimsy?
A little bit, but that one made a little bit more sense. Like, it had one clear gimmick, and Disney was doing it, and it was Disney being like, look at this, we can make fun of ourselves, too.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay.
Whereas,
and Amy Adams, America's new sweetheart, was very sweethearty in that movie. She was adorable.
The alliterative sweetheart, Amy Adams,
yeah.
Daughter of John Adams.
No.
Adamses are very popular right
now. There's a long gap.
John Adams, Samuel Adams. John Quincy Adams.
But okay,
Madam, I'm Adams.
Mr. Megorium, everyone's favorite palindrome.
Yeah,
living palindrome. So Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium is a wonderful place.
There you go, super villain, the palindromic man. Backwards or forwards, I'll put up a fight. It's my new super villain character.
That's pretty good.
You can't sneak up on him.
No, you can't. He's got eyes in the back of his head. Anyway.
We talk less and less about the movie every week.
Well, let's talk about Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, which was like Willy Wonka if Willy Wonka like had serious blood loss and was really weak and his skin was all like the skin of the movie was all pale.
And imagine
he mumbled a lot, right?
Who, Mr. Megorium?
Yeah.
Yeah. He mumbled, he talked kind of like Murderface from Metalocalypse a little bit.
Sure. Imagine instead of like Gene Wilder or even Johnny Depp, you had...
And no matter what you say about that movie, it's a pale shadow of the original. Johnny Depp is very good in that role.
Lot to like about the remake. Like, there's a lot to like about the original. There's a lot to like about the remake. I think that people are so...
Well, the original's a classic, so...
Yeah. I haven't made the mistake myself. I called it a remake. It's not a remake. They're both based on the same book. In fact, in a lot of ways, the second film hews closer to the Dahl book.
Yeah. Dahl is right. Take that, Roald.
Man, good one.
But Gene Wilder is great as Willy Wonka.
Dahl wrote one of the Bond movies, didn't he?
He worked on it, yeah.
I think he wrote the script.
Yeah, I think you're right.
He also wrote a bunch of semi-pornographic novels.
They were all part of the same circle. Ian Fleming and Kingsley Amis were all friends. That's why Kingsley Amis wrote the first non-Ian Fleming Bond book under a pseudonym after Fleming died.
But before we started talking in circles, I was going to say that Dustin Hoffman
just teaching
as
people
Mr.
about
Megorium,
Kingsley Amis. Huh?
Dustin Hoffman as Mr. Megorium in this movie, it's as if he was like, I'm going to play Willy Wonka, but I'm going to do it as like a gay character actor from like, I don't know, the late 50s.
And he got hit on the head at some point, and he's gotten a lot of brain damage. It sounds like, it's like if, what's his name, Franklin Pangborn from the old 30s movies was was Willy Wonka. He's the guy, whenever you see a 30s movie and there's like a hotel manager who gets flustered, that's Franklin Pangborn, I think his name. It's like, really? We don't let that happen in this hotel? Right. Like,
or like a less high-pitched, more lispy Ed Wynn.
Yeah, or let's face it, if Charles Nelson Reilly played Willy Wonka, this is that movie. Yeah.
And if
they name droppers.
If he had a sidekick that was a boyish praying mantis of a girl, which is Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portmanteau.
Nordley Portman.
Nordley Portmanteau.
Nordley? Norbit Portman.
I'm writing my Mad Magazine parody of Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium. Mr. Blechlorium's Wonder Blechlorium.
Yeah, that's good
stuff. Drawn by Jack Davis.
Oh, I wish. If I could work with Jack Davis or Mort Drucker, oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be as awesome as the He-Man original cell that someone gave me today. But anyway, that's besides the point.
Now you're cell dropping.
But anyway,
so we were making fun of how Natalie Portman looks weird.
Well, she is not, I think, any of our idea of the perfect woman.
Very severe.
That was your word to describe it. Severe. In this one, they've particularly de-sexed her because it's a children's film, I guess.
Sure.
But let's go. Do you want me to go over the plot of Mr. Megorium?
Sure. Quickly.
There's a magic toy store in an unnamed city.
Wait a minute.
Called Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium. It works on magic. Everyone agrees to this. Magic. It just is. Mr. Megorium is Dustin Hoffman. He's over 200 years old, and which means he must have killed somebody at some point. You got to assume. It was a much brutaler time back then. And he runs the store. Natalie Portman is named Mahoney and works for him. And there's a kid who's amazingly talented at everything but has no friends because he's a loner. And
he has big ears and wears hats all the time.
He collects hats and wears a different hat all the time. He's kind of gay too. Dustin Hoffman, he says, I'm leaving soon, so I got to hire an accountant. He hires Jason Bateman, who we actually were never given the backstory on him. He just doesn't believe in magic. He's a normal person.
He's just like a nerd or something.
Yeah, and throughout,
I wouldn't say a nerd. I would say he's a sane human.
He's a
being.
Professional. Yeah, throughout the
Someone
film,
who walks into a toy store and doesn't assume it's magic or magic based.
Throughout the movie, we're given like many situations in which Jason Bateman is a normal person. Everyone else is cuckoo, wacky, and irritating. And then Mr. Megorium. Should I spoil it for the people at home?
Sure.
Okay, he's leaving. This is all stolen from Harold and Maude, so he plans to die on a certain day, and he does, and Natalie Portman doesn't believe it, and the store doesn't like it because the store is sentient. And
which is kind of strange.
Yeah, and
the store's scared that once Mr. Megorium goes, no one will believe in him anymore.
And he creates that self-fulfilling prophecy by becoming depressing and boring, the store that is. Natalie Portman doesn't know what to do, and then in the end, everyone believes in themselves, and magic comes back, and store is okay.
Yeah.
And it's
name
kind of
brand toys are purchasable again.
And this is the thing. It's a magic store. There's all sorts of crazy characters running around. Kermit is shopping in it at one point.
Yeah. This really bothered me because
what I like to believe is also it's a magic store, so Kermit can exist in it, but outside of the store, he's just a puppet. So is he trapped there? Is he a prisoner of the store?
There's a 10-second shot of Kermit just him walking along with a basket and then they catch a bunch of kids bug-eyed at him, and he's like, "What? I'm just shopping, doing."
Your Kermit sounds so much like Hank Hill.
Yeah, sorry,
Miss Piggy. but Gonzo ain't right.
Yeah,
anyway,
but
my Hank Hill's not very good. But
I do a better Gonzo.
Let's hear it.
This looks familiar.
It's pretty good.
Vaguely familiar.
You sound like whoever does Gonzo's voice.
Considering
he was my favorite character as a kid, I'm surprised I don't know who does his
voice. Wait, Gonzo is your favorite character, huh?
As a kid, he was. Now I like Kermit because I'm a saner individual than I was.
Okay.
But
anyway,
Kermit's
so,
just like walking along shopping.
Wait, what was Gonzo again?
He was a Gonzo.
Okay.
Yeah. In the non-canonical Muppets from Space... they suggest
really,
that he's
you decided
an alien.
What's in the canon and what's
where look does, after Henson died.
Where
nothing,
does where
nothing.
Does so Christmas Carol, Muppet Christmas Carol? That's Muppet not the canon. Treasure Island, Muppet Treasure Island.
No, everything after takes Manhattan.
Meet the Feebles, is that in the canon?
it's in the Peter Jackson canon.
along with Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, they take place in the same universe, just at very different times.
But anyway, the weird thing is it's Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium. It's all like stuffed animals and wooden toys and, the kinds of things that Santa would make in his workshop.
Finger paints.
But then there's also Kinects and Playmobil figures. Hot Wheels, very prominently placed. Slinkies, all these name brand toys, and it's
well, he's
like
gotta pay the bill somehow.
Well, like Mr. Gregorium knows which side of the bread is buttered. You know, he knows he needs to put out some hot. Like I was expecting it, and Robo Sapiens up the shitter. There's Robo Sapiens everywhere in that store, but I was expecting at one point just a shot of kids playing Xbox or something. Like if you're selling all these Robo Sapiens and things, why have a room full of rubber balls or you know?
Yeah, he's got
all this
like,
other nonsense.
He's got a mobile made of live fish. He has a room that you can set to different settings. Like one of them, balls. You know, the first thing I think of is not necessarily
sure
rubber balls when I just see balls on something. But you open the door and a bunch of CGI balls bounce around.
Yeah, a lot
kids.
Of CGI in this movie, which is another problem.
Just really? Magical stuff, but then yeah,
just magic. You know, just magic.
Your average magical shit. Well, see, I believe in magic, so
oh, I don't.
If Mr. Megorium willed his store to me, there'd be no problem.
Hint, hint, Mr. Megorium, if you're listening. But they like, and also everything was CGI. So, like, one of the great things about Willy Wonka, the original, the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, is that it's like everything looks not real. Like those Oompa Loompas look like real Oompa Loompas, but like it all exists in a physical space. Like even when Mike TV is shrunk down, it still has the because it's him and he's not shrunk into like a CGI Mike TV.
Yeah.
It still looks there's a certain amount of reality to it. And Stuart, this was something that you picked up on and were very critical of throughout the film.
Yeah, very very biting commentary, I think. but that was the thing. Like, do you think that they chose to put shitty CGI in there because they're like, ah, a bunch of fucking kids are gonna watch this. I don't give a shit.
Possibly. I think they just didn't. They just
like everyone's
going
to be paying attention to Dustin Hoffman's amazing performance.
He's going to be magnetic. So,
well, like I said at the time, the climax of the film hinges on a magical block of wood, and it's just a block of wood. It's like supposed to be just a block of wood, but then it flies around the store.
It's magic.
And I was like, oh, it's good that they did that in CGI because a block of wood isn't something you can just get anywhere.
Well, I think they originally shot it with. Out a block of wood.
Oh,
probably
and
a
then
like
a CGI block of wait.
Probably like a tennis ball or something. Yeah.
Yep. And I mean, I think they're kind of relying on Jason Bateman's amazing performance.
He's got Joan Cusack syndrome. He's the best thing in whatever he's in.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't see The Kingdom,
including Teen Wolf 2.
Well, he's the star of that film. So. But there was
Hancock. He's in Hancock.
And Hancock, which I haven't seen yet. I was so hoping when the posters for Hancock first came out, it was just Will Smith scrunching his face up and just at Hancock. I was so hoping that he was somehow playing John Hancock. And it was like, the British think they can shut down my smuggling operation. Whatever. Sign my name
or
real big.
Or it was like a modern version like John Hancock comes back.
Yeah, in the body of a black guy.
Wasn't that movie
to
called
learn
Soul
a little
Man?
Something about racism.
Soul Man was, well, there's more than one movie called Soul Man, but.
Oh God!
Oh, but if we can talk,
we're talking about really good special effects.
But if we can
this
talk,
movie's full of them. What were you talking about?
If we can
though?
Talk about story structure for a second,
sure,
here,
of course.
As I'm sure everyone who's taken my Learning Annex class would have been able to tell, there's just scene after scene of whimsy, very forced. Like this store is crazy and full of magic, and then it takes forever for the story to kick in, and then it just kind of like lurches forward in steps. And there are things that don't make sense, like none of the characters' backgrounds are really fleshed out that much. There's a guy, there's a huge mustachioed guy who at the beginning of the movie we're told, it's narrated by the kid with no friends. He says, this is, you know, Bellini. He writes the story, and you'll see it. And then it's kind of forgotten. Like,
yeah.
Bellini finishes writing the book, what, 20 minutes before the movie ends? And
he's
just forgotten.
I think the kid even makes a point like, this is one of my favorite stories. It's like, hold on there now, kid. Don't church it up too much. I don't,
really,
the audience's hopes.
And also,
too,
they should have named Bellini Stromboli. That goes without saying.
But also, you start the movie at two levels of remove. You're like, okay, so this kid is telling about the story that this other guy wrote, and I guess I'm going to see that.
But so that's a terrible framing
Thank
device.
Thank God that they framed it, because if they'd just done it as a straight narrative... Can you imagine the mess?
Even you know you have to
I'd
tell.
Be like,
it
am I watching a story right now?
Yeah, did he make this up or
is this supposed to be in my imagination right now? I don't know what's going on.
Am I watching a movie? I don't remember.
Am I alive or am I in heaven? The but it's like even if it's a movie for
is this
kids,
a documentary.
It's a movie for kids, so it has to be a little simpler. Like it can't be Chinatown, but you can still have a story that moves from scene to scene and isn't like. Set piece. The purpose of this set piece is to show that magic is wonderful. Scene two. Now we're going to show that Mr. Magorium believes in magic. Scene three. Mr. Magorium says something crazy. Scene four. Magic is wonderful.
Like, look at those Hot Wheels.
And so buy Hot Wheels, kids. And for some reason, Simmons mattresses. They go to a mattress store at one point, and there's a big Simmons sign in the background. And it's,
well, yeah, let's talk about this. Natalie Portman is so disturbed by the idea that Mr. Magorium is going to die sometime, in spite of the fact that he's 250 years old and is probably praying for death at this point.
But the inside of his body
barely
is
alive.
Problem.
Yeah, she like forcibly has him admitted into the hospital, being like, "This guy's crazy." See, he's always talking about how he's 250 years old
that
and has a magic toy store. I'm
that
like,
conceit ends after about 4 seconds.
Yeah. Well, the doctor's like, there's nothing physically wrong with him, so we can't hold him. I'm like, what about the fact that he's crazy?
Yeah, but it's a hospital. It's not a mental institution.
I guess.
Do they do tests on him? Like, could they tell? Like, can't you do something like what they do with the tree and figure out how old he is?
Yeah, they cut him open
like
and they counted his rings.
I thought you were like, can't I do tests to prove that he's magic? Like,
you're scoring very high on a magicometer.
He's got a shitload of
midichlorians. His urine starts like flying around the room.
Mr. Magorium's midichlorian count is incredibly high.
Through the roof.
You could be the next. What do they call him?
I don't know.
He has some special name for Anakin, right? Or
yeah, but like, and at that point, of course, Natalie Portman would be like, not again.
Yeah.
She was in the Star Wars movie.
Sure.
She played Queen Amidala.
She had babies, Darth Vader's babies.
Yeah, and then she died out of a lack of will to live. That was so, it's like she lost the will to live. And I got so mad because I was like, what about her fucking kid she just had?
Like, thinking of all, like, a robot? Like, was that, like, analyzed?
I do love that the robot, there's a nurse bot that it knows human emotion better than the Jedi's do. Like, that scene would have worked so much better if she died and the nurse bot was like, I don't understand, her vital signs are fine. And someone said, she just lost the will to live. And the robot's like, huh? And looks confused. But instead,
and then melts.
Yeah, and then melts out of the logic loop.
Yeah, but shooting out sparks.
It's just
out
like
of
the Kobayashi Maru.
Or if there's a later scene where you see the robot at home where like the robot's like, I didn't have the heart to tell them I never passed my roboting medical exam.
I've been practicing without a robo license. Lost the will to live. I guess that's really because they're bleeding all over the place. Is that really what?
Man, 15 of your patients lost the will to live this week. That's terrible.
You got the worst luck, nurse bot. Yeah, I know. Pretty bad, huh? Beep, beep, boop, boop.
Oh, rats.
Now it's someone just pretending to be a robot?
Yeah, pretty much.
Bantha-poodoo.
No Java Wanga.
But after like, Natalie Portman comes to her senses and is like, oh, okay, everyone has to die sometime.
Yeah, it's basically the
whatever.
Mr. Hooper episode of Sesame Street, but worse.
She's like, I'm going to show you the best, most whimsical day you've ever had.
I'm going to out-whimsy the shit out of you.
Yeah, she's like, I'm going to be 5 times as whimsical as the character I played in Garden State.
And that was whimsical.
Yeah.
That shit was fucking retarded. But yeah, like, and their attempt at, like, showing how great life is was them, like, jumping on fucking mattresses in a mattress store.
Yeah, they go to a mattress store.
And then they went to a clock shop and they set all the clocks to go off. No!
Yeah, but when they're jumping on those mattresses, like they were just literally jumping on 2 mattresses side by side. They didn't like jump from mattress to mattress.
No, they didn't do anything fun.
Yeah, and then there was a cut to like a big mustachioed guy being like, I guess, holy shit, they're ruining the springs of my mattresses.
I assume he's the manager of the mattress store.
Yeah.
And
he's not going to sell those. How is he going to feed his family?
I want to give him the backstory of the salesman who sold me my mattress years ago, who kept told me all about how he came back from Vietnam and worked his way up through the mattress business. So I think I
on his
that
back.
I'm just trying to fill in the background of these characters who exist only as cartoons.
But the
piece de resistance of this day of life, this celebration of the joy of life, is Mr. Wellington.
They unroll a big thing of like a packing, whatever packing. What do you
bubble wrap?
Bubble wrap, and she has him dance on it.
Yeah,
and he pops it a bunch. And and
she laughs and laughs and laughs.
Why is
laughs
that like
full head off?
Why is bubble wrap like go hand in hand with like childhood glee. Like,
well, have you ever popped bubble wrap? It is. It is.
I mean, I enjoy it. But
well, it's
I don't
not
think
that
that's like
to
the
pop.
Last thing I want to do before I die, though.
And then he used a public payphone to call somebody.
Yeah. What? Why does that like reaffirm his like will to live? Like, oh my god, this is what life is all about.
But it doesn't reaffirm his will to live because he dies afterwards.
Why does she think it will reaffirm? Why? Okay.
She's stupid. I don't know.
He could have been with us for longer, you know, is what I'm saying. If she had done more, I'd
maybe
rest in peace, Mr. Mogherini.
And they do show his tombstone at one point, and his pet zebra does attend the funeral. But there's maybe that scene was just to show how unmagical Natalie Portman is, so she can rediscover her love of magic later.
Okay.
I don't know.
But he seems to enjoy it. But speaking of,
I think he was just humoring her.
Speaking of Mr. McGorry,
I think you're reading into his performance.
My last day on Earth is going to be so unpleasant if I don't pretend to enjoy this.
Speaking of Mr. McGorry, ruining other small businessmen as he seemed to do during his
day, just irritate them, whimsy.
Part of what Jason Bateman discovers when he comes in to be like the accountant is that Mr. McGorry hasn't been paying for things, or like hasn't paid taxes.
His entire career. He's had the store for probably, what, 100 and some odd years?
Yeah.
Ever since he came from the old country.
And we're meant to be, like, I guess as the audience think, like, oh, magic is free? You don't pay for magic, you old fuddy-duddy.
But he's got these bills.
Wanting to
use
money?
Who's sending him bills
exactly.
If his store is magic? It's the same problem I had with...
Mr. McGorham's a real dick.
There's other
magic stores around the world, obviously.
It's the same problem I had with Fred Claus, the trailer, because I didn't see the film, which is, if Santa Claus is magic, why is there a consortium of business interests that's investing in him? Like, he shouldn't need money. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but in this case, Mr. McGorham is apparently trading money for goods
and/or
services, but he doesn't pay his bills.
He doesn't pay his
taxes.
Like
when the invoice
either.
Comes, he just throws it in the back room.
Yeah,
waits for Bateman to come.
Turns
clean
it into
it up.
A paper airplane.
I'm absent-minded. Blah blah. You're coming with us, Mr. McGorham. You haven't paid your taxes in 100 years. But I can't go to prison.
I'm Mr. McGorham.
I'll just break out. I'll kill you all.
I like to think that they took him to prison, but let him out because he was fucking annoying.
Yeah.
Prisoners complained.
Yep.
I just want to say, I don't know about you guys, but I'm waiting for this guy's, this director's next film, Mr. Mandalabra's Candelabras, because that's going to be pretty awesome.
It's a pretty good one. How long you work on that one, Dan?
Well, I did make a joke about Mr. Mandalier's chandeliers during the...
Oh yeah.
So I just thought that candelabra was
He's doing a slice of life drama called Mr. Malerapi's Marriage Therapy.
Starring Gabriel Byrne.
Every day it's a different patient.
What a hook.
Mr. Malotline Suicide Hotline.
Oh man.
Mr. Gagorshinist's Magic. Okay. I don't even need to finish that one.
Oh man, we had some laughs right there. Yeah. Woo.
Mr. McGornofriger's Magic Pornography. Anyway.
Man, we could do that forever.
Any occupation that you can rhyme things with.
That's how you do the formation of the joke, right?
Think up an inappropriate occupation and then reverse engineer a title.
Like Penis Gobbler.
I'll show you. That would be Mr. McGobblers. No, that doesn't make sense.
Mr. Meanus.
Mr. Mark Knopfler's Penis Gobblers.
Exactly. No, which is a great album. You should buy it. Maybe for your dad for Christmas. I think your dad enjoys the smooth sounds of Mark Knopfler.
The Dire Straits album, Penis Gobblers.
Oh, dear. We do have
this was
fun.
Supposed to be called I Still Want My MTV. Why did you... Who made this unauthorized title change? Mr. Knopfler, right? Well, we didn't expect you to come down here, sir.
We were just screwing around, but we were just fooling around with Photoshop, and, well, we accidentally hit save.
And by then, the system was in charge. It was too late. Mr. McGorham. But I guess it was just, everything about it was so forced. That was the...
Yes. Everything was so forced. But then, like, at moments, real life would intrude when it shouldn't. Like, there was
like
an odd scene.
There was that weird scene where they were watching the towers collapse on television. That seemed inappropriate. I really broke the mood of the film.
This is... Okay, like...
It's too soon.
I'm talking about, though...
Too soon.
That kid, like, the little kid, the 8-year-old, like...
With the hats.
Kid with the hats. Like, his mom's telling him to make friends, so he makes friends.
Wait, which kid?
The one with the hats.
Oh, yeah, right.
With the big ears.
Oh, okay.
He makes friends with Jason Bateman.
You know, the insufferable one.
And so he has Jason Bateman walk him home for safety. And then we cut to a scene of him and Jason Bateman putting hats on in his room and play acting.
Doing some cosplay.
Cosplay. One's a king and the other is a jester.
And then his mom comes in and is like,
I know that one.
What's going on here? As you would if a strange adult man was with your young child.
In his bedroom.
In his bedroom.
Unattended.
Mm-hmm. And then the scene just sort of ends and is not referred to again.
with his sport coat off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his sleeves were unbuttoned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if I was the mother, I would assume he is getting undressed.
Well, and there's a moment.
Well,
there's
so
a moment
it doesn't
where,
get
like,
any
clearly
fluid
the audience,
on
the adult audience, is supposed to be like, ha, ha, I get it. She thinks he's a pedophile.
That is a good point. That is what we're supposed to think. Is like, uh-oh, she's going to think it's... She's going to be suspicious, but she is suspicious of his pedophilia.
It's like that type of joke when somebody walks in hearing two people talking and just assumes that they're talking about blowjobs or something.
Yeah.
That's a little different. She's a little bit more justified in her fears, I think.
Well, yeah, but obviously in the scenario I'm talking about, like, one person's, like, you know, straightening somebody's belt or...
Yeah. My favorite one, something like that from Three's Company, was there was a nun who a nun came and stayed at their house. This young, attractive nun, and she is talking to one of the women who lives there, and she's like, "Oh, I receive all these letters from other nuns looking for advice. Here's one right here. Let me read it to you. I just met a young man, and he's so handsome, I don't know what to do. I'm so attracted to him that I fear that I'm going to leave the order." And John Ritter is about to walk into the room, and then he overhears, "Tell me what to do. I don't want to break my vows against God, but I love this man so much." And John Ritter's like, "Oh, she must be talking about me. I better go." But just the whole pretense of, "Let me read to you aloud from this letter that I received from a nun in trouble.
Let me read this penthouse forum and oops."
Here, let's perform the scene from a play where we're coming onto each other. What? But it's not what it looks like.
It's also funny because it's like, it's not even a double entendre. She's just worried. Like, that he's going to ruin this nun's life. He's like, oh, she's a nun. She shouldn't be lusting after me, John Ritter.
Star of Stay Tuned, I think?
Yes, exactly. Star of the great Stay Tuned.
Bringing
him and Jeffrey Jones. They should have made so many movies together.
Jeffrey Jones was in Mom and Dad Save the World, right?
Yes, he was.
That was part of the Jeffrey Jones renaissance.
Renaissance? Is that the cool way to say it?
I believe
Z's and things.
I believe
days,
it's pronounced
Elliot.
Renaissance.
Renee Zellweger-sance.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Mr. Magorium.
Okay, so, man. Are we done talking about it?
It could be. I mean, I could talk all day about that ballroom, but, you know, room full of balls.
Oh, right. I thought we were talking about
that. Oh, and also there was that sad
room.
Sock monkey that I guess wanted a friend.
That's creepy.
But he would just sulk.
Yeah, there's a sock monkey who keeps, like, reaching out sadly to Jason Bateman throughout the movie.
How did the Emporium make money? Like, most of the time it was just kids farting around and, like,
they made at least. We saw them make two sales
total.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they were,
and one was to, like, one of her college friends.
Yeah, that was weird that went nowhere.
Yeah,
there was
nowhere
no reason
at all.
Since we had already been introduced the character of Mahoney, there was no reason for her college friend to be like, "Mahoney, I remember you. You're still working at this store? I thought you were going to play piano." It's like, we know this. The narrator told us this. There's no reason for this scene to exist.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they could have played up like the idea that she desires the life that this guy has, or...
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe she was in love with him, or they had a really awkward date
or just
date
the,
or
who they were, yeah, what their relationship was.
Sure.
It's like that scene in Fargo where Marge meets the old...
No, that's a brilliant scene. That's totally different.
That's exactly like Mr. McGorry.
No, it's very different. They're two very different movies.
Scene.
No,
I think you'll find that this is a word for
very,
word remake.
This is like a...
it's like Gus Van Sant's Psycho.
If I can name drop slightly, I was talking to Mr. John Oliver, who of course appeared in The Love Guru, and I mentioned, and I used that as a riposte to something he said to me, and he goes, "You know, when you think about it, Love Guru is a movie just like Citizen Kane is a movie." And it made me so mad that there was no way to differentiate the mediums between these two films. You know, I was going to say, what was interesting about this movie is if it had been made in the 80s, the early 90s, then like Toys, it would have been about like the military finding out about this magic store with its magic book that creates anything and trying to steal its secrets. But instead, since it was set now, it was about bills and, you know, not being able to pay them and so forth.
Sure.
Yeah.
People losing their whimsy.
But it felt like, or it would be about like a giant corporation trying to, like, every movie I feel like when we were kids was either Toys or Santa Claus the Movie.
Yeah.
Where it was about a corporation or the military trying to steal a magic character's secrets.
Yeah, or like, you know, the local bikini car wash being shut down.
Yeah, you were really hoping there was going to be a bikini car wash in this. What was it going to be, the kid
movie.
With the hats and Natalie Portman wearing bikinis? I don't...
I think the toys.
Yeah, well...
sexy
I mean,
toys.
I think,
a lot of
I
Robo Sapiens in bikinis.
I don't think anything would have been gained by having Natalie Portman being a bikini.
Wow, ouch. Yikes. I hope she's not listening to this.
I still like you, Natalie.
That's very nice.
If you are listening.
Maybe that
are you listening?
Kid's mom.
Well, you're right.
What?
Maybe the annoying kid's mom.
She was a little too Allison Janney-ish for me.
She wore a lot of, like pantsuits, but...
Yeah, well, she was professional.
Yeah, but, you know, those are the hottest kind, you know?
I want to believe that she was Hillary Clinton with the pantsuits and everything.
Oh, okay.
They were wrong color, but that makes the movie that much more interesting to me. If she has a second life as a single mom with a lonely child.
Kind of like Reba.
Yes, just like Reba McEntire's character on her show, Reba. Or like Grace Under
the
Fire.
The eponymous Reba.
Yeah, yeah.
Was Reba a single mom in that show?
Yeah, that's the song tells you that in the beginning. She works too hard, but she loves her kids.
Let's,
she's got the heart of a fighter.
Let's go on to our final judgment on Mr. McGoring.
Final judgments. Flophouse final judgments. Brought to you by Nabisco.
A current affair.
The Flophouse is brought to you by Rolled Gold Pretzels.
The Roldiest Pretzels.
I watched The X-Files for years when it was on TV, and the thing that sticks with me most is the bumpers where they go, The X-Files is brought to you by, and just the quick voice change that the guy had to do between the X-Files voice and the Rolled Gold Pretzels voice.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay.
So anyway.
If you did it in the normal voice, Rolled Gold Pretzels would be too spooky.
Yeah.
People
the
wouldn't
X-Files
pick them up.
The X-Files is brought to you by Miller Lite.
Well, but that's...
Final judgments.
I'll start.
T2, Final Judgment Day.
Yeah, I really didn't like this movie. I mean, it wasn't boring.
Yes, at times it was.
But it was no
give me credit.
It was not to 10,000 BC.
Exactly.
On the Bratz to 10,000 BC scale, it was not either one. It's definitely not 10,000 BC.
Yeah, but if there was ever a movie that, made me want to side with, tax collectors, this was it. You know, it just made Whimsy look so unappealing, and all the characters wanted to force everyone to be whimsical. It was you will be high-spirited and crazy.
Well, that's the thing. There's the kid who is, he says he's lonely because he doesn't have friends, but he seems perfectly fine building sculptures and kind of collecting hats and hanging out by himself. It's almost like, you need more friends. Why don't you make some friends? And maybe it's just because... my life as a kid was hanging out by myself and then being told I should not do that, but I really, really sympathized with that kid and his hats.
Wow.
But yeah, everyone
this has been window into Elliot's world.
Everyone was
house.
Trying to force their lifestyle on other people. It was like the gay marriage protesters.
Wow.
Yeah. I suddenly come out with this incredibly conservative political viewpoint. Yeah, it's just like these abortionists.
I mean,
want to force their lifestyle
real
on
everybody.
We haven't really brought this up yet, but I think this is the first children's movie we've watched on this show.
We watched Bratz. What do you?
Yeah.
I guess that's a tweeners movie.
Yeah,
I guess this is the first.
I don't fucking know.
This is the first young kids movie.
Yeah,
this is
definitely aimed towards your 6 to 11s.
Yeah,
yeah.
So,
or people with the minds of children.
And the thing is,
Lenny from
I couldn't
tell
imagine
me about
a child,
the Emporium.
I couldn't imagine a child of that age would actually enjoy this
no,
movie.
No, they would
way.
Hate
like,
it.
I just got done watching WALL-E, the Pixar movie,
which is a great movie.
Which is a really great movie, and I'm wondering why other people who make fucking children's movies don't just fucking call up Pixar and be like, "Hey guys, how do you make a movie right? Because I'm all fucking thumbs right now."
Yeah. I saw your movie and it was really good.
Yeah.
How did you do?
I was just going to make a remake of that, but rights and everything.
Elliot, any thoughts?
Yeah, it was also a terrible movie. I was pushing for us to watch this movie for a long time, and it lived up to my every expectation. It was stupid and unlikable, and it was like a writer director who thought that he had tapped into his inner childhood, but it was like a cynical fake inner childhood.
Yeah.
And things either moved way too slow or way too fast. Like,
it almost felt like this guy, the writer-director, was trying to pick up Natalie Portman.
I assume that, like, he was.
Like, this was some an elaborate kind of grift.
It was, yeah, like Hitchcock, like, and Tippi Hedren. Or,
yeah, some kind of crazy charade.
That's a movie we should write.
Crazy Charade?
Crazy Charade.
No, it's like an 80s sex comedy, but like the premise is someone's making Mr. Magorium's Wonder for India Girls.
Starring C. Thomas Howell as the writer-director of Mr. Magorium.
That's pretty meta.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like, yeah, being Mr. Magorium.
Who would the girl be? Let's make it the girl from Just One of the Guys, because I like her.
Okay. Or,
but, got nice, yeah, but yeah, that goes without saying. But yeah, this was a very bad movie. And it makes me feel bad about the things that kids watch these days.
And about myself.
And Hot Wheels. No, shame on you, Hot Wheels.
Hot Wheels and Kinex. How dare you put money into this? And Robo Sapien. Et tu, Robo?
So I have a few letters from listeners.
Letters. Yeah. We get letters.
No, don't
we
do
that. We get lots and lots of letters. No. Now you're going
to
get sued by Paul Schaefer.
You're going to get sued.
No, he doesn't know my name.
Your
name's plastered all over this thing. Dan McCoy's The Flophouse, starring Dan
Wait,
McCoy.
Can I read it over
your... Read your letter.
I'm going to read it over your
shoulder. So this is in response to the question of who does Stewart look like with his mustache.
Oh, man.
Which he doesn't have anymore. Now he's back to his usual...
He's on his way there.
Can I point out that after shaving it off, I went through a period of a couple of days where I was really depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's directly related to cutting off the mustache. So if you have a mustache, do not cut it off.
You had post-shave-em depression?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But I think that there's something the same. There's something that these two letters have in common. So I'm going to read them both, and let's see if you can put your finger on.
Okay.
Are they both from my mom?
No.
Are they from the person who was searching for gay Stuart Wellington, Stuart Wellington gay?
Yeah.
I don't think so, but
okay.
The first one is from Ashley, last name withheld. It says,
what ethnicity is that, do you think?
I think that it's Latvian. So,
oh, okay.
It says Dan and Co. So you guys just get to be and Co.
That's fair.
It's like Oliver and Company.
Clearly, the first photo is Columbo doing his W impression while sporting one hell of a stash.
The mustache is completely unnecessary for that.
Or Josh.
Picture.
Or Josh Hartnett, but that's a pretty cruel thing
look
to say.
Like?
That is fucking cruel.
The second photo is...
Yeah, heartthrob Josh Hartnett.
The second photo is Peter Falk in his college improv troupe days.
That's pretty good.
Keep up the great work. And the second one, Stewart disturbingly looks like Josh Brolin as W&W.
Very true.
And this is a side note. The movie nice. The movie Elliot was thinking of, the one with Hugh Jackman and Ashley Judd, was Someone Like You.
Someone Like You.
And although he's probably looked it up by now.
I didn't, because I didn't care enough. But it's the one that was based on the book Animal Husbandry.
Yeah, it was
right?
originally called Animal Husbandry. And then they're like, that... title sounds too unique. Let's change it to something completely generic.
Thank you very much for reminding us about that. Someone Like You.
Yes, I Love You.
That's like A Smile Like Yours.
So did you get the similarity, though, between the two, all of the things?
Josh Brolin?
W?
Mustache?
It's the fact that none of those people actually have mustaches.
Yeah, that was
a question about...
Who does Stewart look like with his mustache? I think he looks like Danny DeVito if Danny DeVito had a mustache.
One of them is Columbo doing a W impression while sporting a stash. Another, Josh Brolin as W&W, one of Josh Brolin's few roles that does not involve a mustache.
Yeah, he was just in a movie where he had a big mustache.
So if there's anyone else out there who would like to do a mustache...
We'd like to do this thing right.
I just made fun of our audience.
Someone Good like job, what dude. Was it called? Someone Like You?
Yeah, Someone Like You.
Terrible. It's like the name of a sitcom that NBC would put on after Caroline in the City in like the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Was Leah Thompson supposed to be hot?
She was always cute.
I mean,
yeah.
There's that great panty
like in the
shot
Back to the Future.
Howard the Duck. That's
yeah.
Leah Thompson.
Yeah, that's Leah Thompson. That's
yeah, fair. That used to be the number one panty shot I've ever seen.
Really? Seriously?
Yeah, it's great.
She
watch it again.
She was on a nude
Don't
beach
raise your
with
eyebrows.
Victoria Jackson in Casual Sex, starring Andrew Dice Clay.
Oh, so many people I'd love to see nude. Oh, great.
Wait, Leah Thompson and Victoria Jackson?
You mean,
and Andrew
you
Dice
mean
Clay?
Casual Sex? It's a movie
exactly.
with a question mark at the end of the title. That's a movie that that could only exist in its time period.
Yeah.
When casual sex started to become a dangerous thing, but it wasn't yet dangerous enough that you couldn't make a comedy about it.
Yeah.
Did Blake Edwards direct that one?
It does kind of sound like late period Blake Edwards. Blind date era Blake Edwards.
Yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to remind people before we get into our recommendations, the holiday season is the Flophouse listener drive season.
Oh, yeah.
I like to think of the Flophouse as the gift we... Don't whistle.
I'm just giving you background music.
I like to think of the Flophouse as the gift that we give you...
For free.
For free. That's what makes it a gift. What's the gift that you listeners can give us? Promotion. You can go to the website...
We sell that line, dude.
You can go to the website...
Each of your salesmen should try to get as many repeat customers as possible.
I've put buttons on the website so you can dig our show. We used to have like 15 digs, then they changed the system over at Dig, and now we're back down to 2. So why don't you get those numbers up if you
dig
can.
Dig us up.
You can go to Podcast Alley
and vote.
Exhume
this corpse of a podcast.
iTunes reviews. If you review us positively on iTunes, that's actually a big help. Or subscribing on iTunes rather than listening online to bump our numbers up.
I'm doing my part. I'm subscribed on iTunes. Are you?
You can link to us, or if you know, if you know anyone in the media—not the real media, because they wouldn't care about this—but the online media,
internet media,
yeah, you know, bloggers and such.
Yeah,
you can mention us to them
people
or something.
Who, Matt Drudge? I don't know.
Perhaps someone out there is a podcast publicist who wants to give us their wares.
Is there such a thing?
I certainly hope not. Anyway.
Well, you've just alienated them.
I think you get our point.
Good job.
But yes, please help other people listen to us because...
Look, I feel awkward making a plea for an audience. That's why we're getting so stupid, but...
PBS does it all the time.
Exactly.
And I would say, since I just watched a one-hour special they did on the New York Public Library system, can you believe they need to do pledge drives for viewers? I don't understand it.
Well, you watched it, obviously.
Well, my interests don't really match up with most people's. I was fascinated
rarified,
by it.
Rarified.
What I didn't realize is that used to be the site of the New York City Reservoir, where the library is now. It's just a huge open-air reservoir that people would pee in.
I know at least one listener who'd be fascinated by that. Our friend who works at the main branch of the library.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Great story.
Anyway, please listen.
Now what do we do?
Now we talk about movies that we saw recently that we actually liked.
Awesome. Oh, man. So many.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have one, Stuart?
I watched a bunch of movies lately that I'd seen part of but hadn't watched all of until I was really bored. And so I watched a bunch of movies. So I watched, like, Flatliners.
That's not a good movie.
No. I watched
Earth. There's a lot of the Brat Pack in it, though.
That's true. In their dimly lit medical school.
Guys. It was very creepy, by the way. Where were they going to school at? In, like, Canada or something?
They were going to Arkham, I think. Arkham University.
Yep, Miskatonic University.
Miskatonic University in Arkham, Massachusetts.
Sure, yeah.
I would say Arkham Asylum, which is not a school.
Yeah.
It's an asylum.
So, and then I followed that up with Earth Girls Are Easy, which I had never seen and was great. any universe where Jeff Goldblum is a hunk is top dollar. In my opinion. And then I watched Executive Decision, which I kind of watched. I was doing stuff at the same time. But it was really good. And, it just, like, it was kind of cool because for a kind of crappy movie with Steven Seagal and Kurt Russell in it, it seemed like they genuinely made an effort to make it seem realistic, I guess, as those things go. So it was pretty good. I liked it. So Executive Decision and Earth Girls Are Easy. Okay. A double feature, probably, is best.
Letter E double feature.
Yeah.
I saw a couple movies from last year that were not big hits. I mean, they were released sort of in the mid-range, but weren't super successful. I watched Red Belt, the David Mamet movie, starring Chiwetel Ejiofor. And
you just made that name up.
That's not a name. That's a Scrabble hand.
What? Racist. But... you know, David Mamet movies sort of live or die on whether he casts someone who can ignore his directorial style with actors and just be a good actor. And Chiwetel Ejiofor is a really great actor, and I really enjoyed that movie. And it's a movie, you know, so many movies you can tell exactly where they're headed from the very beginning. That was a movie that moment to moment I had no idea where it was going. And it doesn't necessarily like all hold together perfectly at the end, I feel like, but I really enjoyed it. And I also watched Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day, starring Frances McDormand and Enchanted's Amy Adams, and Lee Pace from Pushing Daisies in the Fall, the film that you recommended.
My favorite movie of the year so far, I think.
And
Legends of the Fall?
Yeah, Legends of the Fall. No.
And I really enjoyed it. It's not, you know, it's not up to par with, like, an old screwball comedy.
It's not up to par with, you know, like Jules and Jim, but
well, no,
just rank it against, like, there was a review of Changeling recently where it said it's good, but it's no Chinatown. It was like, okay, it's not one of the best movies ever made, but that's
well,
all right.
I'm saying it's trying to capture a certain style of old filmmaking, like not quite screwball filmmaking, but in that same vein, and
very,
it's
like,
not
frothy, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's not up to that sort of par, but
wait,
for
like
a modern version of it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like the
there's a lot
86
of
comics.
Well, you know, it's got a cover where a woman's running away and a guy is pulling her bra back. It's exactly like screwballs.
Bikini, actually.
Okay, but
you have the poster. You have the limited edition lithograph.
If you want to see a film that's sort of like a P.G. Wodehouse, Jeeves and Wooster story, if Amy Adams was playing Marilyn Monroe as Wooster and Frances McDormand was playing Mary Poppin as Jeeves, if that sounds interesting to you, it's a fun movie. And I just realized by looking at the IMDb that it was written by Simon Beaufoy, who just wrote Slumdog Millionaire. Which was pretty good. I didn't love it as much as everyone else did, but I thought it was solid and fun. So,
I also felt that way about Slumdog Millionaire.
We're in agreement.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
I saw. Let's talk about old movies. Since you talk about a movie that was kind of in that style, I recently saw two old movies that I liked a lot. They might be a little hard to find, possibly, but they played
because you hit all the cups.
Yes,
but you made the movie.
Well, these were two movies that I DVR'd off of Turner Classic Movies kind of on a whim, and I'm glad I did for both of them. Did I talk about Jewel Robbery?
No.
Last time there was a movie.
Isn't that a game that secretaries play at work on their computer? Jewel Robbery.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
I'm thinking Bejeweled. Sorry,
I don't know
that either.
Okay.
You work in an office. The Jewel Robbery is a movie with...
yeah, and you shoot The Daily Show out in the middle of a field.
It's an outdoor
like
show
toys.
With William Powell and, I want to say, Kay Francis is the woman, but I don't think it is. I can't remember the name of the woman. She is a kind of flighty European, vaguely Middle European, you know, rich woman, and he is the most debonair jewel thief in the world. And this movie is an hour and 15 minutes long, and it's really fun. And the scene where he first meets her during a jewel robbery is so, like, so much fun. She's buying the super expensive diamond with her rich husband, and William Powell walks in, the owner of the store goes, "Can I help you, sir?" And he goes, "Yes, you can, my good man." And his valet holds out a case, opens the case, and William Powell pulls a gun out of it and goes, "I'm going to rob your store, gentlemen." And he's like, "Oh, take a seat, everyone. Take a seat. Let's start some conversation. This will be nice." And William Powell takes out a gramophone player and plays a record of the Blue Danube. And, like, he's just the most debonair, stylish jewel thief in the world and very friendly. And it was a very kind of short, fun movie and very light. And the other one was a movie I just finished watching this morning called Hollow Triumph, which is a film noir that Hans Conried from Casablanca, among other things, was the star and producer of. And it's one of the most kind of contrived plots in the world. He's a gangster on the run, and he ends up in a town where there's a man who looks exactly like him, but with a scar on his face, who's a psychiatrist. So he takes that man's life and has to scar himself, but the pictures he took of the guy, at the lab, they accidentally reversed them. So he puts the scar on the wrong side of his face. And it's like, at every plot point is kind of contrived in a way that's almost exciting in how, you know, unrealistic it is. But it's shot really beautifully for a kind of what I assume must have been a fairly low-budget film. And there are these great scenes with smoke and darkness and things like that. And there are all these great side characters who are just, like, either really funny or really weird-looking. there's this one character who's a coworker of his at a taxi company, and he's just in the middle of the night by himself practicing ballroom dancing, and Hans Conried comes up to him and interrupts him, and he goes into this long thing about how he needs to find the right ballroom dancing partner, and I know what you're going to say, my problem is I'm too short, but if you have confidence, you can project the impression of height, plus they make tall shoes that I can wear, and it's really funny, and then this character is never heard from ever again, and it's like... There are all these great little scenes with strange characters and the whole thing. And, you know, it's a quick, kind of like fast-moving, crazy film noir movie called Hollow Triumph. Or you might find a copy of it under the name The Scar, which was the English release title. I recommend both of those. I'm trying to make them famouser.
So.
Like Nathan's.
Six recommendations tonight between the three of us.
Is that a new record?
I think I Earth Girls Are Easy is the best one. So.
Okay, sure. It does have Julie Brown in it.
It does. And Damon Wayans.
Not Downtown Julie Brown, though.
No, no.
The other Julie Brown.
The one with novelty songs.
Mm-hmm.
To her name.
The one who was on the short-lived MTV sketch show The Edge.
Yeah.
And Jim Carrey's in it.
Yep.
Who was on MTV's Weebo. Other sketch show in Living Color.
Is that his name? Weebo? Is that his?
You're thinking of Weebelows.
I think.
Weeby Loyal Scouts.
I can't remember. No, he's Whiplock.
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 Because that's the best. That's the best line in the film. When at the end, like they're leaving, and Gina Davis is like, "Oh, Whiplock, I think I'll miss you least of all."
Yeah, Gina Davis, such delivery.
Yeah. Was that the movie that she and Jeff Goldblum met on, or was it Transylvania 6-5000 or The Fly?
I think that both of those other movies came before.
Okay,
Earth Girls.
They were like Tracy and Hepburn. Falling in love, making movies together.
Until Rennie Harlan came between them.
Mm-hmm, as he is for many people.
So, guys, this has been a good holiday show.
Yeah, we talked a lot about the holidays. It really was a lot of Christmas and Hanukkah cheer.
I want to talk about Rennie Harlan some more.
We'll rent The Covenant and discuss.
Yeah, that was great.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about The Covenant. Is that the movie where... It's super powerful 20-year-olds, right?
Yeah,
and they're warlocks. They use their magic powers to lift up girls' skirts.
Yeah.
And they're all, like, super rich, too.
Yeah.
So, like, it's basically snobs versus more snobs.
Snobs versus snobsers.
Yeah, so are we done here?
Yeah. Yes, Stuart, you can go home.
Cool.
I allow you to leave.
Okay, so...
You may not... You guys listening don't know, but Dan locks us up.
Dan, don't we have some? Don't we have some business here?
Oh, sure. If you want to email us, maybe about Stuart's mustache that doesn't exist anymore or another topic, maybe about the holidays, you can email us at theflophousepodcast@gmail.com. Or if you want to send us a gift of some kind.
Or if you take issue with anything we've said and you want to start an argument, let's start this.
Yeah, Natalie Portman.
Let's open up. Yeah, Natalie Portman, if you're out there and you think
Natalie, I still love you.
Or if anyone disagrees with Stuart and thinks that Natalie Portman is super attractive, write in and we can have an argument over who's attractive in film today and lose all of our female listeners.
Sure. That's what they all like to hear is a relative hotness discussion.
let's sink this thing into the gutter.
And if you want to go to the website, it's theflophousepodcast.blogspot.com. Maybe someday we'll get an actual domain name.
Look at me. I don't know how computers work.
For The Flophouse, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin.
Good night.
Yeah, good night. So, wait, The Long Kiss Goodnight was Rennie Harlan. Which Nightmare on Elm Street? Was it Nightmare on Elm Street 3?
Oh, I don't remember. For him, he'll just be Cutthroat Island Rennie Harlan. For me, that's...
Vampirotica.
Fair enough.
Fair enough for fun.
Vampires.
Verotic.
Nosferotic.
Nosferotica. Yeah, this is my collection of Nosferotica. A lot of people say Vampirotica. I don't.
So, ladies, that was my burn on you guys.
Start again.
Later, us.
Fucking.
that was a record scratch. That was the dog doing
a double take.
Aye. That was someone who didn't think that they heard what they heard. Shaking their head.
It's me cleaning the wax out of my ears because I thought you said something retarded.